Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you listening. We're also very happy to have back once again with us on the program the man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. And for more years than we care to count, he's been stopping by here on a regular basis on the first Wednesday of the month. And we talk about food and cooking and share stories and recipes. And we always have a great time. Now, you know, during the summertime is a great time for cooks because there is so much wonderful fresh produce available. And you can go to the farmer's market. Maybe you can even go to your backyard and have something to cook with. And so there's a certain kind of thing we like to do in the summer. But I know, at least I do, and I'm sure that a lot of cooks, as much as they might be enjoying that kind of cooking, they, some point in the summer, their thoughts turn to turning on the oven and it being cooler, and then doing those, the kinds of things that you can do then. And they're starting to think about soups and stews and roast vegetables and baking. So Doyle's thought was, okay, well, we're now definitely into fall, and we got cooler temperatures, and it's okay to turn on the oven. And we are coming into a time of year when there are people do like to get together and celebrate with their families, whatever kind of holidays you observe. And often part of that celebration is a special baked item. This is the time of year when definitely the sweets appear on the table, and there may be something that you only make at that time, or maybe you just say, well, yeah, I make that in the fall and the winter, or maybe it's something that's made for a special occasion, and maybe it only shows up once or twice. That's what he'd like to hear about. So that's the title we put on the program. We said, well, we'll talk about holiday baking. It doesn't necessarily have to be a holiday item, but you know, what's that thing that you think about in July? You think, boy, you know, I would really like, if it was cool enough, I'd like to fire up the oven and I would like to make this thing. What is that thing? And what are you making now? What are you baking in your oven that's a special sweet treat? Could be, who knows what, pie, cake, cookies, bread. You know, it's pretty much wide open, although I think that Doyle kind of has in mind some kind of sweet item, and we'd like to hear about that. And he's brought some recipes to share, and if you have some, you can just call us. 333-9455, that's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And if you wanted to, you could send us an email, will-talk@illinois.edu. So
here we are.
Here we are once again. was there something? I always say the same thing. So was there something in particular that got you thinking about this?
Well, actually, it was just the idea that I ought to be doing some baking. I mean, it was just, well, it's baking time. And so concentrating on that, I use a convection oven. So it's very convenient. I like it. It works. And so I'm always pleased to be able to pop something into the oven. All during the summer, I was indeed baking little brownie bites.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fond of those. They make a nice little snack that I'm probably not supposed to eat, but if I get
if they're small enough.
That's exactly it. And they are small. If they're tiny, they're very tiny. But gee, are they a treat? Then I wander through magazines and books that I have just as a pastime. And I came upon something that I really wanted to make because I haven't made it in a long, long time, and this is kind of a new recipe for it, and I have gone out and bought the goods. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make an Indian pudding. I was going to make it a week ago, but the party that I was going to take it to decided not to have a party, so. So I didn't make the Indian pudding, but I've always been fascinated with an Indian pudding because some people it's just a matter of, you know, what's for pudding, and so that may be there or it may not be there, and other people look forward to Indian pudding as a real great treat, and I wanted to enjoy both aspects of that. So I got very interested in that's why I thought of baking, because I'm interested in this Indian pudding recipe. It's a new recipe. It comes from a source of recipes from the American Test Kitchen. You know, they're always dressing up and fixing up, and they claim that this will be the ultimate in the Indian pudding because it isn't dry, and it isn't overcooked, and it has a different flavor. So I was sort of interested in that.
Well, they're the ones who experiment with recipes and do everything you possibly can. Tweak it every
yes.
way that you can to try to figure out what the best set of tweaks are. And I think they do fabulous work. I mean,
I do too.
You know, if they say do it this way, I figure, okay, I'm doing it that way.
Last week, I think it was last week, last Saturday, I was watching, and it was like, you're going to do what? You know, this is supposed to take 4 days to do it, and you're doing it in 10 minutes? Oh, yes, we decided that if you do this, this, that, that, and that, you don't need to do all those other things that were done. And I'm impressed with that because I like the idea of cooking that is a progression of learning and a progression of putting things together in a different manner, which I think probably comes from the fact that I have maintained for a long time that American cooks are the best cooks in the world because they're more inventive than anybody else. So many other cuisines are stuck in their mode and they don't move. And even when they pretended to have the nouvelle cuisines and all that, they didn't move very far away from no, you don't do this, you don't do that, you do it this way, you know, the old tried and true way, which I'm all for also. But I like the fact that we are so open about cooking that you can have Indian pudding. Which I'm sure isn't very much used in any place else in the world. It uses ground corn, and polenta comes as close to it as you can get. And there are some sweet polenta cakes, but they aren't what Indian pudding is. So, it gets back to the fact that we've got a real storehouse of stuff to eat and make and enjoy here.
Well, for those people who think pudding is something that you make in a saucepan on top of the stove, you know, it comes from Jell-O. What exactly is this thing, Indian pudding? Now, it's something that I know I've heard of, but no one has ever served it to me, nor have I ever actually looked at a recipe for it.
I think because you either really have to have practiced a long time and made it in a certain way and developed your own nuance on doing it, or else it's going to end up being a dry lump of something that you wish you hadn't made. I'll tell you this recipe because I'm impressed with it. Mm-hmm. And here are the two changes that they have made in the recipe. Instead of using just molasses, they use molasses and maple syrup. Well, that would give an immediate, delicious, delicious taste. And you would never think of mixing. You wouldn't. No. The Easterners have the maple syrup. That's all they get. And the Westerners have molasses. That's all they get, you know. But molasses and syrup. And then cooking in a bain-marie. The way you do certain soft puddings with putting water into the pan underneath where these pans are. And what that does is it tempers the heat so that all the heat doesn't go to the bottom and cause it to dry out and become a mess. So those two changes they have made. I will give you the recipe right here. 4 cups plus 2 tablespoons of milk, 1/2 cup of molasses, 1/4 cup of maple sugar, 1 teaspoon of vanilla extract, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/2 teaspoon of ground ginger, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 3/4 cup of yellow cornmeal, preferably stone ground, which Bob's Mill that we can get here in town we were joking about the fact that I like to get my ground cornmeal from Indiana. From you go to the Covered Bridge Festival, mm-hmm. and you can buy at one of the mills. You can buy, and you can watch it being ground for you, and you can buy it there.
That's pretty cool.
But that's a hard job to do. And then two large eggs, lightly beaten, and one teaspoon of cornstarch. So you can see what this is a kind of a curious pudding mixture of eggs and milk and eggs and milk that the cornmeal is added to, and so it's going to be like a very nice pudding. Now you cook this at a very strange temperature, which is rather low, 275. So that's another thing; it doesn't dry out and cook for a long period of time. A 2-quart casserole or 9-inch souffle dish. Cover the bottom of the you need to boil some water. I don't know why I was reading that part. Bring the 4 cups of milk, molasses, maple syrup, vanilla, cinnamon, ginger, and salt to a simmer in a medium saucepan. And then slowly whisk in the cornmeal. So you've got all the wet stuff together, and you've heated it up, and you whisk the cornmeal and reduce it to low and cook, stirring frequently until it has thickened, and the whisk leaves trails when it is stirred. So that's about 15 minutes. That's a little bit of a time. And then whisk up the eggs and the cornstarch and the remaining 2 tablespoons of milk until it's smooth, and whisk that into the cornmeal mixture and increase the heat to high and cook it until large bubbles, about 1 or 2 minutes later, large bubbles, those volcanoes that appear. And then pour the cornmeal mixture into a prepared dish, wrap it in foil. So you're going to keep that moisture in there. Wrap it in foil and set it inside the roasting pan and put boiling water into the pan, and then bake it until it is no longer runny and has set. Now, that still is going to be about 2 hours. But you see, it's at a very low temperature, and it's very protected from all the moisture. Then remove the baking dish from the water and let it cool for 20 minutes, and you can cool it at room temperature for about 3 hours after it's, if you put it in the ice box or something. Yeah. So it comes out to be a warm, or not a warm, but a room temperature pudding. But you see, that's totally different from what you described as you may have eaten or may not have eaten. And it's all these little things that they put into it that I think are interesting. Yeah. And they make a point of the fact that they put the 2 sweets in, and they put the bain-marie, cook it in a bain-marie. But I'm anxious to get that done. I've got it's all the stuff sitting on the table for me to get doing it. But that's what prompted me to get out and bake today.
So how is this now? I guess I can see that this is definitely different from polenta or grits, something like that,
right?
Because it's got the sweet in there. How is this different from spoon bread?
There's no baking powder.
Oh, okay.
First, there's no baking powder, and in spoon bread, it's just eggs and buttermilk, and butter, and cornmeal. If you remember. Grant,
I was thinking of one of our outings with the crock pot, and that there was a spoon bread recipe, but I couldn't remember exactly what went into that.
And there was corn, and there's cream corn and regular corn that went into that particular recipe of his. But it mainly the baking powder is for the rising, and it cooks quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's in a 350 oven, and it doesn't cook very. Okay. But this you have to cook for 3 hours. So you can see this really was a very, very old cooking manner of cooking at a low temperature for a long period of time. You do what. It comes from the fact that you fire up the stove and you get breakfast made, and you get the eggs and bacon made while the stove is hot. And then while it's cooling off the rest of the day, you put in these things.
And
let
so
them
you
bake.
Just have it, make it up, and put in there, and just leave it, and then
literally leave it. So I mean, it comes from that manner of cooking where you really fire everything up, get it hot, but then it cools down, that comes from a European tradition of even the bakers in parts of Europe. I know in Greece and in other places I know too, but they fire up the ovens, big ovens with wood in them. I get so jealous of David Rocco and his
You'd like to have a wood burning oven.
I want a wood
you?
Burning, but I knew that I would not take care of it, and I would get mad at it, and I would be impatient because I want it done now, you know. And I do know that the answer to that is you started it, you got it hot. Now it's hot enough to cook all day long in it. I do think that those techniques are to be paid attention to when you're looking at old recipes.
Yeah. Our guest in this hour of focus is Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence. It is the first Wednesday, and for a long time it's been our great pleasure to have him here on the first Wednesday at the 10 o'clock hour. And we talk about cooking and food and have a great time and tell stories and exchange recipes. And it's always something a little bit different. And we're encouraging you to tell us about a baked item, something that maybe you've just made recently, or one of those things that you were thinking about when it got cool you wanted to make. And it could be associated with a celebration or a holiday or a special occasion or a family gathering, but it needn't be. Maybe it'd just be something that you'd say, okay, if I have some friends coming over, friends or family, I'd like to make something special, a sweet, and it's going to be baked in the oven, and it's not maybe not an everyday thing. Call in and share the recipe with us, 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line. That one is good, anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. The email is will-talk@illinois.edu. So if you want to call in, you can do that and get on the program. We have someone here to talk with in Urbana. And this would be our line number one right here. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I just wanted to go ahead and share one thing. Is that I do love holiday baking and things, but I'm not the biggest fan of sweet. And I came across this as an idea a few years ago, and it's become one of my favorite, completely bizarre, yet extremely good desserts. Now, it's a savory-style dessert. And the way that it works is that it actually has a compote that goes with it. And I've learned through describing this over other conversations that if I describe the main item first, I usually lose people and they're like, ugh. So let me describe the compote first.
Okay. Uh-huh.
It's a Ruby Port wine reduction. And you use a little bit of a very tiny bit. It's more of a method for me than anything else. But it's about a cup or so of Ruby Port wine, and I've varied the berries that I put in there, but usually like frozen blackberries or black raspberries works very well, and a little bit of cumin and a little bit of pepper, and this is all boiled down until it has like that thickened kind of compote consistency. Now this goes over a blue cheese cheesecake.
Ooh.
Now, I have tried many, many different kinds of cheesecake recipes, and if you go for that cakey style, it doesn't really work really well. But if you have a favorite New York style that has more of that cream cheesy kind of quality, what you can do is take that huge pile of cream cheese that you have, which is usually like a pound or something like that, and if I replace maybe, I'm using like three packages of cream cheese. If I replace half of one of those packages of cream cheese with blue cheese, pick your favorite, Maytag, Roquefort, Stilton, whatever you choose. I've had good success with many different kinds. And then you go ahead and make it like you would normally. And then when you serve it, you're cutting it, serving it, you're putting that blackberry, port wine, and cumin compote over it. And it just, the first time I tasted it, it was like, this has become one of my favorite holiday kinds of traditions. And usually people, when they hear blue cheese cheesecake, their eyebrows go way up and touch the hairline.
Yes, well, that would kind of cause you to be startled because empathically, when you say cheesecake, you're already drooling toward that taste, and but that really sounds interesting because it sets that it's a strange complexity because you have sort of pushed it out of that with the blue cheese, but then you've brought it back with the elaborate berry and wine combination.
Yeah, that compote really just ties it all together.
Yes, it would. It would make you realize that you really got a good taste, and then you serve that at the end of the meal.
Yeah, usually it's kind of a savory style dessert, like if you're going to do a cheese course or something.
Oh yes.
See, that's what I'm thinking. That this is I don't know how many people eat like this, but the idea of having a cheese, a little cheese, some fruit, and something like a port at the end.
Exactly.
At the end of a meal. Well, you just put it all together in a little different way, but that's a very traditional kind of a finish to a meal.
Yeah, yeah. And what I can't wait for is this year, is because last year somebody looked at me and said, bacon. Little tiny bits of crisp bacon baked into this cheesecake. And I was like, oh, went up to me. I should have thought of that.
Well,
my next step.
That may be a bridge too far.
No, bacon right now is very hot.
Lardon.
Yeah.
No, I believe that might be. That would go with every bit. The bacon would go with the port wine and the berries and the bacon. I mean, I watched the bacon program last night, and they were putting it everywhere.
I
thought, gosh, you can do. They were making bacon drinks and bacon thises and bacon thats. Mm-hmm. And I myself have used some bacon.
Well, there's always Grateful Palate's Bacon of the Month. Dan Phillips does.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Boy, talk about a Christmas gift that I've waited for years.
Bacon of the month.
Bacon of the month.
So well, anyway, I just wanted to share that with you.
Well, that's really good. It's very inventive, and I appreciate it very much.
And is this your own recipe? Did you make this up?
Actually, I wish I could claim it. My mom had come across it in her annals of years of recipe collecting, and she said that she had tried it a long time ago, and I kind of resurrected it, and it's become one of my favorites. And definitely, it's the right sort of person. Like I said, I'm not the biggest fan of sweet, but this is just that balance of sweet and savory that really reels me in.
Very interesting. All right. Well, thanks very much. Hey, we appreciate that.
It seems to be very rich. I mean, I get not very little sweet and a lot of richness something you would enjoy.
And I would think it would be one of those things where you could get by with a relatively small serving. You wouldn't have an enormous amount of this. But a little, I think when desserts, where as far as desserts are concerned, inflation has been serious. Where now, particularly some restaurants, I think they think it's a wonderful thing if they give you an enormous
too much food,
too much food, and then too much dessert. And I see these servings of cheesecake, for example. It looks like enough cheesecake for about six people. I'm thinking, just slice me off just a little tiny. I want about four bites. That will be good.
Blackberries and port wine, but cumin and pepper.
And of course, as we all know, ain't nothing that can't be improved by putting cumin on it.
That's true. That's true.
Let's go on to another caller here. Line 2 in Urbana. Hello.
Hello. Hi. May I go back to Indian pudding?
Oh, please.
And it's way back. I'm afraid there's a voice from history. And
yes.
All I can add is history, because probably the tools are not, or the containers, shall we say, are not readily available now. But my mother loved to make Indian pudding. She was no cook, but we had a coal stove. We grew up with a coal stove. So that's the first hurdle for anybody who's listening.
Yes.
They're not going to have a coal stove. But as you indicated, it's a matter of time and the stove cooling down and all of that.
Yes.
And we had a special metal container that was shaped, how can I describe it, sort of like a gallon jug in a way, that had a cut-off top, not a little screw lid, but about a third of the way down, no, not a third, a quarter or fifth of the way down, it had a lid.
Oh,
that
that screwed on.
Yeah, and so the Indian pudding was some of the ingredients that you mentioned, but not the new twist.
Yes.
And that all went in the eggs and the milk and the cornmeal and the seasonings. And as I say, Mother was not particularly much of a cook, but she would put all of this into this container, which then went into a larger container of boiling water.
Okay.
So it was,
now you screwed the
double boiler kind of.
You screwed the top on it.
You screwed the top.
Aha!
Uh-huh,
see, that's equivalent to the wrapping in the aluminum foil.
Right.
Yeah, you keep
right.
that moisture inside.
Keep the moisture inside, and we never had dry Indian pudding. I never heard of such a thing.
Uh huh. Uh huh.
It was just yummy. It was molasses. It didn't have any maple syrup. Although we loved maple syrup, we never thought of that. But anyway, it boiled on the back of the stove, or simmered, I should say.
Oh.
In the double boiler thing for 2 or 3 hours.
Kind of like a steam pudding.
It was a steam pudding. That's what it was. And it came from none other than Fanny Farmer.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that's a Fanny Farmer recipe.
I'm going to look that up.
But you
yes.
have to find an old version of
yes,
Fanny Farmer.
Yes, I've got one.
Have you? Well, yes. I'd love to know if you could find it in there, because ours fell apart. It was so used.
It does.
And we got the newer edition, and it didn't have some of the good old things in it. And I don't have any cookbooks left because
oh my.
I'm in Illinois, and the family's in the East.
Yes.
So anyway, this is New England. This is Boston Fanny Farmer's cookbook kind of thing.
Oh, that really sounds good.
So it's yummy, and it's pretty painless. It doesn't take a whole lot of steps
well,
to put it together or to get it going.
But it takes some conditions, and
yes,
and you've put those out. A low, slow oven for a long period of time. Well, not in the oven.
Not the oven.
No, it was steamed on top.
Double, yeah.
But the fact that it was covered with a lid.
It was covered
with
tightly.
A screw tightly with a screw down lid.
There must have been some air between the concoction.
Yeah.
And,
then in a another pot of hot water.
Outside we had a great big thing that we canned vegetables or something. I don't know what we did with
that. A pot that big.
Great big pot that the smaller one, which would hold a quart and a half or two or well,
yeah.
I'm not very good at measurement. I'm not a cook, to tell you the truth, but I love to listen to you guys.
Well, I appreciate your being here.
Anyway,
thank you
for doing what you're doing. It's
yeah.
lots of fun.
Well, thank you. We'll take some more calls. I have an email when we get to. We'll talk some more with our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, after a very short break. This is Focus.
Today's broadcast is made possible in part by the Brown Bag Deli in downtown Monticello. Brown Bag Deli offers freshly made casual lunches and dinners, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, and a wacky collection of unique cards and gifts. Brown Bag Deli encourages you to join them in supporting WILL.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you here. On the program in the second hour today, we will be talking with Gwendolyn Wright. She's professor at Columbia University. She is an architectural historian, and she is one of the hosts of the very popular PBS television program History Detective. She's been there right from the beginning of the show. And we'll talk a little bit about the program and its approach to doing history with her in the second hour. She's here visiting the campus. Tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, the guest is journalist, writer Siddhartha Deb, and we will talk about his new book, The Beautiful and the Damned, A Portrait of India. It's about life in contemporary India. And then one more I'll mention. Tomorrow we'll be doing our monthly show on computers, an opportunity for you to call in and ask questions. Maybe you have some kind of problem. You're not quite sure how to deal with it. We have two guests with us to answer questions. Jim Eyrick, who is a security engineer with the National Center for Supercomputing Applications here at the U of I, and also Deb Fleiger. She's a network engineer with Sites, the Campus Information Technologies and Education Services. And so computer questions, that's tomorrow at 11. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon, 10 different topics. You can get the schedule or listen to past programs by going to our website, which is WILL.illinois.edu. And this morning we're talking with a guy we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. Every month on the first Wednesday, we talk about cooking and exchange stories and recipes and have a great time. And this time he said, well, now that we're definitely back into cooler times and it's okay to turn on the oven, and maybe you're even thinking about turning on the oven, the subject is baking. Is there, and particularly we're looking at sweets, special things, maybe the kind of thing that you would do on a holiday as something special for friends and family. And maybe there's something that you only make at this time of year or around holiday times. Or it's that thing that you look forward to. You know, it's 4th of July, and that's swell. But you think, you know what I'd really like to have is some Indian pudding, for example. So maybe you'd like to share a recipe with us. We'd be happy to hear from you. We have a couple of people here ready to go, and our next is in Orland Park, line number 4 right here. Hello.
Hi, how are you guys?
Fine, thanks.
Good. Hey, a year ago in the fall, your guest was on, and he gave a recipe. It sounded like a wonderful cornbread, which involved cornbread, I believe, sour cream, and cream of corn. And I tried finding it on the archives and wasn't able to do that. Is it possible he could bring that in and share that?
That's Grant's recipe for the spoon bread.
Oh, so that was from the crock pot.
Yeah, from the crock pot series.
I don't know if we have that somewhere online, but I'm sure we have that recipe.
I've locked it in my mind.
Oh, you have it. Okay.
I will give it to you quickly.
Oh, great. Thank you.
4 eggs. 4 eggs, and you whisk them up, and 2 boxes of Jiffy cornmeal mix. Those are the little Jiffy cornmeals. 2 boxes of that mixed up with the eggs, and then a cup of sour cream, and a can of cream corn, and a can of Niblets corn. And that's all that goes in it, salt and pepper to your taste. That's all that goes in it, and it's baked off in a 9 by 13 pan. So that's just eggs, sour cream, mix Jiffy mix, because that's got baking powder and stuff in it, so you don't have to add that extra. And then that's all there is to it.
And it is. How long would we bake that? What, an hour?
Oh, no, I don't think an hour. I don't think more than 45 minutes. That's the part I can't remember right now. But you'd see it puff up. It'll puff up a little bit because it's got eggs in it. And then it'll turn brown on the top, but not dark brown, just a nice golden brown. So probably 45 minutes at the maximum. It may only be 30. But you can watch it, and you'd know that. You see, I'm taking it out now, and it's really good.
I can't wait.
That's it. He said that was his aunt's spoon bread recipe. It's a little bit different from other spoon breads, but I sure do like it. And you make it, and people just gobble it down. They think like they've never had anything that good.
All right. Thank you.
Yes.
Again.
Sure.
Indeed.
Thank you. Oh, so okay. It was not the crockpot show. This was the picnics, potlucks, and tailgates. Was that the second one that we did? This was August of 2008. I can't quite believe that it was that long ago. Yeah, that we did on WLT.
Yes.
And we had cookbooks made up. I don't know if we still have some of these. We should check and see if we still have some of the books from those shows that we did.
Okay. I've got mine.
All right. Let's go to another caller. Mansfield, line 1. Hello.
Hello. I've been told I'm a very good cook, but I've never mastered cheesecake.
Oh, my.
But if you can wangle me one small slice of that blue cheesecake with the compote, with the port wine compote,
yes.
I will donate $150 to WILL Radio.
Mercy. I don't know how we're going to do that.
I don't know how we're going to do that.
Oh.
I would say make it and enjoy it. He didn't give the complex amounts and such, and so it was so find a cheesecake recipe.
But I'm not any good at cheesecake.
Well, but give it a try.
His cheesecake.
Give it a try, because I think that that you know, the impulse to do it would get you going, I think. And what its major thing was to change some of the cream cheese with blue cheese, and that's the major change and difference. So dig around and find a good cheesecake recipe that uses a lot of cheese, and not the cakey kind, but the cheese, and give it a try. That's what I'm going to have to do.
Oh, you couldn't have some kind of fundraiser where some of your loyal people that call in with recipes bring stuff in and people donate money?
This is very dangerous. If our development staff gets wind of the idea that people pay money for us to cook for them, we're in big trouble, my friend.
Oh, okay.
Well, I'll ask the caller, what difficulties have you had, what problems have you had in trying to make cheesecake? Is there something in particular, it just doesn't come out the way that you looking for?
I don't know. It doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't. And that's all I can afford right now. But if you can wangle me just a small slice of that, I sure would. I want. That's what I want. I don't want to make it. I don't know.
Well,
don't
you know what?
Well. I won't make it well.
You want to have somebody make it for you?
I'll tell you what. I'll give you another thought. You surely have some friends who would be willing to try to make it. And so get together with them and make those variations and see if it doesn't come out right. So find a friend of yours that is confident in making a cheesecake, and then have them help you make this for you. That would
be one idea.
Yeah, well, that and you would probably enjoy it, and they would probably be thrilled to have a variation.
Okay, all right. Thank you.
All right.
I want to make sure I get in an email here, because I think this is something you will definitely have some thoughts about. And that is an email from someone who writes and says, my mother loves mincemeat pie, and I would like to make it for her at Thanksgiving. Can you suggest a good filling for it? The listener says, I tried to make my own, but it came out absolutely horrible. Help! What do you think? Mincemeat pie.
Mincemeat pie is a very, very peculiar thing that Americans do rather well. I've never found out why it's called mincemeat, because mincemeat really means chopped meat. And I have arguments with some of my British friends about, oh, no, it has to be made with this meat. And I remember my mother trying to make it with deer meat once. That was in 1943. and it didn't succeed. Mincemeat is a peculiar object. It's very much like a chutney in that it is a lot of different fruits and different spices that are all cooked together to make kind of very much like a chutney, the mincemeat that you buy. And you can buy it, especially right now, you can buy it in jars the whole jar is full of ready-made mincemeat. Or there are small packages that are condensed dried mincemeat, and you have to take those and cook them and bring the moisture back to it. But I find that I can't really tell the difference of the taste. It's the convenience, although the one in a jar costs a little bit more than the one in the package. And they have the one with the jar has a recipe on it for what to do. It really isn't. It isn't anything that you have to do, because they've got the mixture already made, and that's just put in between two pie crusts. But it's a very old traditional form, and it's gone through many different forms. I have a recipe that I was going to give for a mincemeat cake, but it uses the jarred mincemeat, 2 cups of canned or jarred mincemeat. And the last time I made this mincemeat cake, I used the dried kind, because I managed to sneak out. They, The stores decide that no one wants any mincemeat after January 1st. Now, it makes me aggravated, so I have to run out and buy quantities of it before some, because I like to make this mincemeat cake at different times, not necessarily in the winter. But I would suggest that you get a jar of mincemeat and find the recipe on the back, and that because all it is that filling in the pie. You'll like it.
Okay. Do you want to give the recipe for the...
I can do that, but we have somebody to talk to.
Yeah, oh, yes, we do. Well, we'll do that. And we'll go to Urbana, and this is line number one. Hello.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to say thanks for bringing up mince pies. We don't actually call it mince meat, just mince pies.
Mince pie. Oh,
and
that's...
they're best as the little individual ones rather than a big pie.
Oh, you like little ones, yes.
It's very rich. You don't want too much of that. As you say, mincemeat, which doesn't have a quotient of meat in it. It's got a lot of spices.
A lot of spices.
Kind of cloves and cinnamony taste.
Oh, yes.
Actually, it's quite delicious. And if you make the small pies and or tarts, you know, as they might be called here.
They would be tarts, yes.
And you then sprinkle a bit of powdered sugar on the top.
Oh, my.
And we serve them hot with clotted cream.
Oh my!
Or brandy sauce.
Brandy, yeah. I vote for the brandy sauce.
There you go. Anyway, I think Myers have it, and certainly Artmart would have it. I don't know. You seem to say that even the regular stores will have it at this time.
Oh, they have mincemeat now. Yes.
Yeah. But you're absolutely right. I mean, you have to just buy the ready-made. I'm impressed that someone tried to make it themselves, but I can imagine that it would be pretty indifferent at that.
Well,
all right. Well, I always appreciate your program, and thanks for bringing up a British Christmas fair.
That is very good Christmas, isn't it? thank you very much.
Right,
well, that's
right.
Interesting. I'm looking here on the Epicurious website. They have a number of recipes for mincemeat pie, and they do. It looks like they do have some that they're expecting you to use the pre-made jar mincemeat, or there are others where they say that you can make your own. And, for example, here's one that it is a mixture of dried fruit.
Yes.
So pears, apricots, apples, prunes, peaches, figs. It also includes some dates. Then it has cinnamon, allspice, nutmeg, salt, sugar, some dried cranberries, a little water, some cornstarch, and some brandy. And that's the mincemeat. So essentially, you see what it is. It's dried fruit and spices, and it's got some stuff, hopefully, to help it kind of stick together a little bit, has a little brandy, which couldn't hurt, and then you make up your pastry dough and you just chop all the stuff up and put it together, and you cook it. It looks like you cook it a little bit, but not very much, and then you put it into the shell and you bake it, and there you go. So I'm not quite sure how you could go wrong.
You could go wrong by using the wrong fruits.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't think that apricots are used, and I know that apples and pears, I'm not so sure that cherries are used, but dried cranberries, I would, as the British love sultanas, which are such an exotic name for a raisin.
They're just the gold ones.
Yes. Yeah. And I would like currants in it too, because I like the small dried currants. But you have to be careful, because some of those fruits, when you are using them, are too big and too wet. This comes out to be not a real wet, sloppy thing.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm just saying those are the things to avoid, are things that would cook down and be too mushy. You don't want this mushy. You want nice, uh-huh, nice chunks of it. And I believe that there might be some suet put in, but
I did actually find one recipe that did have suet in it. In fact, here there the in the first one that comes up, this is a recipe that came from Gourmet magazine, and it has Granny Smith apples, it has golden raisins, dark raisins, currants, brown sugar, and it has beef suet. half cup of beef suet, in addition to some brandy, some lemon juice, some lemon zest, some orange zest, some allspice, and nutmeg. So that one, that actually does have the, it has some sort of meat-related component to it.
Well, that gives it some body. That gives it some body.
Well, that's very interesting. Okay. Well, we have a good 5 minutes here. Would you like to give the
as long as we're talking about mincemeat, I would like to share this mincemeat cake with you. This is a cake from North Carolina that was made when you're busy making fruit cake. The children all want to get it. And you have to make the fruit cake this month in order to have it for Christmas. In a month and a half, it has to sit around that long. So here was something that was made as a surprise for the children, so they could have it in anticipation of having the real fruit cake. 2 cups of all-purpose flour, 1 teaspoon of baking soda, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, 2 large eggs separated, 2 tablespoons of bourbon, and a note is if you don't want to use bourbon, put in water, 8 tablespoons, 1 stick, of unsalted butter softened, 1 cup of sugar, 2 cups of the jarred mincemeat, 1 1/2 cups of pecans chopped, and 1 cup of raisins. So what you do is you put the flour, baking soda, and salt, and put that in one bowl. Then whisk the egg yolks and bourbon in another small bowl. This takes a lot of bowls, but it's worth it. So you've got the flour in one and the egg yolks and the bourbon in another one. And then you beat the egg whites in another bowl to soft peaks and set those aside. Then you beat the butter and the sugar together in another bowl until they're fluffy, and reduce that to a medium. Then throw in the egg mixture, that was the egg and the bourbon mixture, and mix that until it's all incorporated. Then add the mincemeat, and you use your mixer to add the mincemeat and mix it, because if you don't, it ends up being big clumps of mincemeat in the cake. You don't like, so you want to use your mixer, and you add the flour. So that comes to the end, the flour. Now you got the whole body of that. Then fold in the pecans, the raisins, and the egg whites, and put it in a tube pan, and cook it for 60 minutes at 325 degrees. And then you've got a mincemeat cake that will thrill you.
See, myself, you know, we've talked about this before. I have a recipe for fruitcake that I like, that's an Alton Brown recipe.
Oh, yes.
Which I think is really very
good.
Oh,
yes, I do.
And my feeling about it is that it's good right out of the oven. I don't want to wait. And what I do is maybe you can, for a day or two afterwards, you can dress it with a little cognac. That's like to do a little Martell on there or something.
Yes.
And which it adds a little kick. But I think it does not need to be aged. I think it's pretty much okay.
Well,
I
agree with you. I have made them. Sometimes I've even made them and then put them back in the freezer for a year. I used to keep cycling that, but I've quit doing that.
All right. So one more caller at least. Metamora, line number one. Hello.
Hello. You were talking about mincemeat and the one recipe having beef suet in it.
Yes.
My wife had a recipe from an elderly lady at church that used beef in it.
Oh.
And she used ground chuck, and my wife makes it and cans it yet. And then you were talking about fruitcake, and Thanksgiving time, we put together a double batch of fruitcake, and we have fruitcake all over the place.
Yes.
And we used that mincemeat in it.
Uh-huh.
Beef in it, and assorted other things. But I have never frozen fruitcake. I wrap each fruitcake in cheesecloth that's
yes.
soaked with brandy.
Yes.
And then put them in aluminum foil, and I just put them in a big Coleman cooler or something similar to that in the basement with the lid on it. And we've still got part of one now from last year. And they're good any time. time.
Yes, indeed.
A good fruitcake is hard to beat. It's kind of sad that people got stuck on the store-bought ones, which are good for doorstops, but that's about it.
I second that because I think that I think that a really good homemade fruitcake is really good.
And
if people say they don't like it, it's because they've had something that was mass produced and it's just not. It's dry and hard and it's not good. And if you make your own, either you do the traditional thing like you did, which is great, or you know, I maybe don't want to wait. I think that they're pretty good right off. But either way, if you make your own and you use good fresh spices and you use a nice mix of dried fruit, I think that it's a really good thing.
Well, my dry ingredients cost me about $30 before I even start using the mixing bowl.
Oh, boy. Yes.
The other thing I make is a white fruit cake.
Yes, I like a white fruit cake.
And it's a little bit drier, but it's really a nice change.
Yes.
To have that. But I thought I'd comment about the mince meat with the real beef in it.
With real beef in it. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
We're just to the part of the point we have to finish. I'm sorry we have somebody I don't think we're going to have time here to take. We did do a show where we talked about fruitcakes, and you had one.
The world's best fruitcake.
Well, I'm thinking of the one that's got sausage in it.
That's Kentucky sausage cake. That's a Kentucky sausage cake.
Okay, so that's a different.
Yeah.
But
you think it's kind of like a fruitcake when you eat it.
Yeah.
But it's really a Kentucky sausage cake.
All right. Well,
I don't know if they make it in Tennessee or anyplace else, but it's made with sausage.
All right. Well, for those of you who like bacon on anything and sausage on anything, we'll leave that with that tantalizing thought. And with our thanks to the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. And we will see you on the first Wednesday of December.
I'm afraid so.
All right. Okay. Take care.
Thank you.